Good evening. This is Bob Willard, this is Profiles, and this is WFIU. The music you're hearing is sung by our guest, Carol Lawrence, the most fascinating diva of theater, Broadway, films, and television. Carol, the original Maria in West Side Story, was in Bloomington to participate in the Leonard Bernstein tribute in April of 1999. A few days before flying out, she talked to us by phone from her home in Los Angeles. This week, we'll hear the first part of the interview. Next week, we'll hear the second. So, Carol, welcome to the show. When you were in Bloomington, you made a presentation called A Love Letter to Lenny.
Right.
Can you tell us about it, those that weren't fortunate enough to hear it?
Oh, this is something very close to my heart, Bob, because I did it, first of all, I debuted, it is a lecture, and it is, the Lenny is Leonard Bernstein. I premiered it at an incredible week of salutes to Leonard Bernstein. He had died a few years before, I believe 4 years before. I can't remember exactly. But it allowed me to write him the love letter I never had a chance to write because he died so suddenly. I was supposed to have seen him literally the night before he died when Larry Kurt and I were performing at the Rainbow and Stars, which is the top of Rockefeller Center, the biggest nightclub. It's not a nightclub, but it's a cabaret in New York City. We were the toast of the town, having been reunited for the first time since we performed on Broadway in West Side Story. So it was a very wonderful engagement. It was something I cherish. And Leonard Bernstein had, this is the longest explanation for what the piece is, but Leonard Bernstein had agreed to let us use a portion of the original album to bring us on stage, reliving our first meeting on stage in the gym of West Side Story, where Tony and Maria see each other for the first time. And we walk towards each other, and we begin the Maria cha-cha. Da, 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 dum.
That's at the da, dance,
da,
isn't
the
it?
The dance at the gym. Dum, ba, ba, da, da, dum. And when we get nose to nose, just as the dialogue would have started, I sing to Larry Kurt, who was the original Tony, "It seems we stood and talked like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, and I still remember where. When, and the audience went, and then he sang another song that melded. And the reason that it worked so well is that Lenny had allowed us to create the aura of the gym with ba 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 da, ba 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 mambo, and the people in the audience just were suddenly in West Side Story, and we couldn't have done it with a trio. So I had to call his lawyer to get permission, and she said, you couldn't, you're into grand rights, Miss Lawrence, don't you understand that? And she just laughed in my face. And I said, well, my brother, the lawyer, Joseph Luria, told me that the only person who could grant us the rights to do this is Leonard Bernstein, so do you think you could ask him for me? Oh, I couldn't possibly interrupt him, he's at Tanglewood, and he was blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, if you could get back to me in a week, this is the first number, and we're kind of setting the rest of the act around it. And she said, well, I wouldn't hold out any hopes, Miss Lawrence, because it's just, and hung up. The next morning, very early, she called and she said, oh, Miss Lawrence, it's Sylvia here. And the maestro said, you can use anything you want as long as you ask him to come and see you do it. Well, you know, I fell down. First of all, it was so typical of Lenny, and I said, by all means. And so we did that opening. It was fabulously successful, and the next day after we opened and the reviews were out, I got a call from Lenny's secretary who said, the maestro wants to come and see you do this wonderful show. And I said, bravo, when? And he said, your last Saturday. And I said, fine. So a month later, we arranged. He said, there'll be 16 of us. And I had them, you know, ringside. It was going to be fabulous. And that night, I got a knock at the dressing room. And he said, it was the secretary. He said, the maestro is just too ill to come. But he sends you his love and these flowers and a note. And I was heartbroken. And he died the next day. And that was a Saturday. Sunday he died, and Monday I went on Good Morning America and told the story I've just told you. And that was the beginning of my thinking of being able to really thank him, not only for that, you know, one gracious, generous gift he had given us, which was the opening of our act, which set us up as Tony and Maria, and then we were allowed to be Carol and Larry, as we are now,
mm-hmm.
you see? And I began writing. I somehow got in contact with the Metropolitan Museum in New York City, and they were doing this beautiful salute to him on the what would have been his 75th birthday. And that's where I debuted the lecture. And it turned out to be a love letter that really relived my first meeting with Lenny to this wonderful thing that he gave me the night before he died.
Wow.
That's what the lecture is.
And that's over 35 years of history there, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. We opened September 26th, 1957 at the Winter Garden in a show that nobody believed had a prayer of succeeding. I mean, the audience in New York City were those New York sophisticates who had said, who wants to see Romeo and Juliet in blue jeans and sneakers and with an operatic score? You're so artistic and everybody's going to die in it. I mean, this is not musical comedy.
And they were wrong.
They were so wrong because the American public was ready for what Leonard Bernstein and Jerome Robbins and Hal Prince and Stephen Sondheim had now created, a new entity that they couldn't call American comedy and turned into American musical theater, a craft and an art that we invented, not me, but the American art people.
Well, I hope you don't mind that we dwell on West Side Story for a little bit, because
I don't at all.
It's such an icon of American musical theater.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's indelible in my mind, the picture on the front of the album of you running down the street.
56th Street, West 56th Street.
Well,
it's on the garbage can. Did you read it?
No.
This is a bit of trivia that people always ask me. They say, well, where was the album shot? And I say, West 56th Street, and they think I'm kidding.
Well,
Larry, literally, we ran down that block all day in the hot heat of the worst summer, you know, New York lived through, and he fainted. He had heat prostration. I was fine, but I don't know if that's a terrible thing to say. It was so hot. I just, you know, the strong Italian peasant stock from which I come is something I'm very grateful for.
Okay. What was it that gave you this opportunity to be in that show?
Oh, this will take an hour. How much time do we have on the air? There is a law in equity. It's called the Carol Lawrence Law, and it says that you can only audition an actor for 3 auditions before you either have to pay them to come back or say he's in or out of the show. I did 13, and I would have done 26, because everybody in the world wanted the plum of the equivalent of Juliet in Romeo and Juliet with Leonard Bernstein's music. So Jerry Robbins auditioned people in London. He auditioned people in New York and California and Puerto Rico. And he, at the 12th audition, and I always wore the same dress, little pink shirtwaist, and my hair the same way, so that they would, you know, hopefully remember that I'd been there 6 or 7 times before. And it was, you audition, my first audition was in the office of Cheryl Crawford, who was the first producer of what was called Gangway. And I auditioned in front, in a very tiny office, in front of a settee upon which sat Jerome Robbins, Stephen Sondheim, Leonard Bernstein, all the 3 of them, and Arthur Lawrence. And at the far end, behind a huge black desk, was Cheryl Crawford, all in black. I felt like I was on trial, and she was the judge, and here was the jury, and a little spinet behind me. And I had to sing Umbel D, because Lenny wanted to hear the operatic range. And as the auditions, you know, progressed, I had to learn a few of the songs from the show, and they would give me a piece of, you know, a couple pieces of paper with a scene on it, like the balcony scene with this paper in front of my face, but they would never let you memorize anything. So by the 12th audition, Bob, I was so nervous, and I just couldn't bear to come back to that incredible tension of being this big black hole with those people you couldn't see out there judging you again and again. So at the 12th audition, Jerry came on stage, and he said, Miss Lawrence, we'd like to see you one more time. And I said, I don't know where I got the guts to say this to Jerry Robbins. Oh, then, Mr. Robbins, would you consider giving me whatever scene it is that you want, just that scene, so I could memorize it and not have to fumble with papers in my hands in a love scene that I should be embracing Romeo? And I didn't raise my voice, though. And so somehow he looked at me, and I didn't know at that time, Bob, that Jerry Robbins, who is the tyrant of all times, I mean, he could diminish and demolish you with four words that just sent you out of the place crying. And he kind of enjoyed that, but that was the way he got you to do whatever he wanted. And so he loved to have people stand up to him, only I certainly didn't know that at that time. And he loved the audacity of my request that he said, okay, you got it. And he gave me the script, and he told me who I was going to be working with. It was Larry Kurt. So I called Larry, and we met just once and ran over the lines. And I said, this would be a nice place for a kiss. How about that? He said, okay, and I'll put my arms around you like this. And we ran through it a few times. Now we're ready. They call us into the theater. And as we walked on the stage, Jerry took back his control. He said, Larry, get out of here. Go backstage, close the steel door so you can't hear what I'm saying, and then we'll call you. And he turned to me and he said, I want you to get lost on the stage so he can't find you, and I'm going to bring him back and he'll sing Maria, and when he finishes, if he can find you, do the balcony sing. Well, I looked at the stage. There was not a piano. There was not a piano bench. There wasn't even a work light to hide behind. And I looked at the back wall, which was old brick, and about 10 or 15 feet high was a little iron grating, maybe 2 by 3 feet, circular, round, and a skinny little ladder that was falling off the wall of iron that led to it. I climbed it in my little pink shirt waist and knelt down on that grating in a fetal position, so to be very small. He said, okay, I'll get him back. So they brought Larry on. Larry came on the stage. He said, sing Maria, and then find her and do the balcony scene. And so for the whole song, Larry was looking in the wings, looking in the pit, looking in the audience, trying to find Maria. Couldn't find him because I was directly behind his head, about 10 or 15 feet in the air. And he couldn't find me, so he finished the song, and he said, Maria, where are you? Because I couldn't find me. Maria! And I, from back there, whispered, Tony, like that. His head snapped and saw me perched up in this little grating. And somehow he leapt onto that brick wall and became Spider-Man. I don't know how he inched himself up close enough for me to reach down, take his hand, and pull him onto this tiny little grating. I didn't even know if it would hold both of us. We clung to each other in total fear, and it was perfect for the scene, because for the entire scene, I keep saying, shh, be quiet, don't let them hear you. It will be, my father will, no, and we sang and clung to each other for dear life. He leapt off. We sang, good night, sleep well, and when you dream, dream of me. And he walked off, and there was pin drop silence. And then they all applauded. And Lenny walked down to the stage, to the footlights, and he said, that is the most mesmerizing audition I have ever seen in my life. And you got it. Well, I burst into tears. He said, no, you got the part. And I was up on this little thing crying. And that's how I got the part of Maria. Now, you didn't think it would take that long to tell.
No, but I'm glad I heard it all. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just a...
That's part of my lecture.
That's a sensational story.
Thank you so much. Well, really, you know, the truth beats fiction any day of the week.
Well, that whole show had such a young cast, and
we were teenagers.
Well,
you had to be.
So
to
many
stand it, to get through the rehearsal period. He worked us from dawn till dusk, and then into the wee hours of the morning. He broke every possible rule. I rehearsed with the principals a whole month before we went into rehearsal in a little attic, unair-conditioned, in June.
Mm-hmm.
With his assistant, Gerald Friedman, who is now the head of the Shakespeare Company in Cleveland. He's now the head of performing arts in North Carolina, and he has done Shakespeare on Broadway. He's a touted, brilliant director in his own right. But at that time, he was a young unknown assisting Jerry Robbins. And we worked diligently 8 to 10 hours a day in the hot heat of summer, doing this every bit of the show with music, without music, with words, without words, in Spanish, in English, improvised completely, you know, and had to literally dissect every scene and find the beats and find the reasons and the person you were substituting in your own life for Tony and Bernardo. So that by the time we got to Jerry Robbins to literally stage them on the stage, we had a lovely, wonderful rapport with each other. We knew what the characters were about, and then Jerry Robbins would proceed to tear everything apart that we had done and then paste it back together his own way. But the show was full of it was a cast the likes of which I have never seen. Cheetah Rivera as Anita had fire and lightning and dance ability and vocal. She's my dearest friend, can you tell?
And she's had a few successes since then,
yes,
too.
Yes, she's currently in Vegas doing Chicago, which she, you know, originated on Broadway in the part of Vilma. She's now doing Roxy. But she's just an incredible talent. And Kenny Leroy was Bernardo. I didn't know for the entire time of rehearsal, Bob, that he was not Puerto Rican. He's a wonderful Jewish guy, but I didn't know that until opening night when I met his parents. And they said, "Oy vey, you were so beautiful. You were so lovely. I couldn't believe how wonderful you were. And Kenny, did you see Kenny dancing? He was sensational." I said, "Who are you?" "We're Kenny's mother and father." And I said, "And you're not Puerto Rican?"
Well, you also had Riri Grist in that show, who went on to quite an opera career, too.
Yes, she's still in Europe. Very famous. She sang Somewhere from the Pit, and Larry and I and the entire cast danced the ballet, which was never put into the film. And I really, really regret that the world did not hear the music and did not see that choreography, which was absolutely brilliant and has never been recorded. Jerry would not allow anybody to film us.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Oh, it's tragic.
Well, why don't we keep in this spirit and maybe hear a selection from the original cast of West Side Story? And
well, I'd love that.
Let's do that.
Please.
With Carol Lawrence and Larry Kurt.
Maria, the most beautiful sound I ever heard. All the beautiful sounds of the world in a single word.
Maria, 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 Maria,
Maria. I've just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name will never be the same to me. Maria, I've just kissed a girl named Maria, and suddenly I found how wonderful a song can be.
We have just heard Maria from the original cast performance of West Side Story, followed by Tonight, sung by our guest today, Carol Lawrence and Larry Kurt, who was the Tony to her Maria in the original cast.
Yes. We did that on the Ed Sullivan Show. And it's one of the few, I guess, filmed segments of the show because Jerry Robbins refused to have anything. He believed truly because we were asked to come on, I was asked to come on and do I Feel Pretty the first week that we opened. The Sullivan Show was, of course, as you know, broadcast on Sunday, so that meant we could do it. It was our one night off, and they wanted me to do I Feel Pretty because it was a light, bright moment of this lovely girl falling in love and the love transforming her into what she felt like as beautiful. So Jerry Robbins absolutely refused to let anything from the show be seen for a full year. He thought that if the American public saw it on television, they wouldn't buy tickets to see it live, you see. And it was absolutely wrong because once we did the balcony scene a whole year later, the line around the box office was enormous and we were standing room again. So the balcony scene did get filmed and cool, but those were the only two things. And so I am sick that the American public has no way of seeing the original cast. We just had incredible people in that show. And it took Jerry Robbins 2.5 years to cast it. You could get too old for the part just in the audition process. So it was an amazing production. It just was.
Well, it had to be amazing in the sense that if you had Jerome Robbins and Hal Prince and Leonard Bernstein, and then you had this budding genius in Stephen Sondheim who wrote the lyrics.
That's right. 25 years old is Steve, and he had done, I think, a topper theme for television and a couple of industrial shows. That's where Arthur Lawrence had seen him audition some music. And at the original onset for Gangway, Lenny was to do the lyrics and the music. And by the time we went into production, or pre-production, they went into pre-production, Jerry had insisted upon underscoring and so much more ballet music than had ever been seen in a Broadway show to date. Lenny said, I just can't handle all the lyrics. The entire prologue was set to lyric. Do you know? All that was lyric. And he said, I just can't do it, so we need somebody else. So Arthur recommended Stephen Sondheim that he heard, and upon meeting, he and Lenny got along so well that Stephen came on board. But before he was hired, he insisted that he do it all. He didn't want Leonard Bernstein writing the music. And the only reason he did come on was because his mentor, Oscar Hammerstein, said, you are in great company, young man, and I would take the job myself because I'd love to work with them, and you will be enhanced and educated all along the way. And so he did come on board and wrote fabulous lyrics. I take nothing from him. He is a genius.
I just wondered if we need a performance waiver for all of the orchestration you're singing for us today.
I belong to that union, so
okay,
it's okay.
Okay. And that, folks, was the incomparable Carol Lawrence, diva of theater, Broadway, films, and television. Carol had consented to this interview several days before she was to be in Bloomington for the Leonard Bernstein tribute in April of 1999. We'd originally planned on a one-hour program, but once this fascinating lady got talking, we realized that we had a two-part program on our hands. So join us next week as we pick up where we left off tonight. Our guest again was Carol Lawrence, the original Maria in West Side Story, international singer, actress, and, well, just a most wonderful lady. Now, to pay some musical tribute to Carol, a selection that she would like to hear is the Symphonic Sketches from West Side Story, conducted by Leonard Bernstein with the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra. Carol tells us that this is one of her favorite pieces. Thank you.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in April of 1999. Christina Kuzmich, producer. Engineering and editing by Michael Paskash and John Shelton. For WFIU, thanks for listening.